Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry, with host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
My special guest, Sharon Ingram, to the program. Sharon, are you with me?
Yes, I am. Good evening, Dr. Ingram.
Let me ask you a question. Why is poetry important?
Poetry is important because I believe it's education. It's entertainment, it's communication, it's therapeutic, and so much more.
All right. Now, as you think about your work, what are some of the themes of your work?
Children's prayers, freedom, Black history, and a variety of other current issues or issues that somehow inspire me or touch me to write something about.
Mm-hmm. Well, will you share one of your works now?
Sure, I will, particularly in recognition of Women's
History
Month.
Yes.
I'll start off with a piece concerning a person that I absolutely love and adore. And in a drama ministry I was in, I often played the character of Dr. Mary Jane McLeod Bethune. Today's slang or urban dictionary could describe me as a unique, true, positive baller and shot caller, in that my experiences and accomplishments have been so rich. They are the products of much sweat and sorrow. Perhaps they are something of value, not empty boasting. They defy all odds for a Negro girl or woman of any color in this world. Who better to know or tell about me? So I wrote my autobiography. Born free on a rice and cotton farm in Marysville, South Carolina, on July 10, 1875, 15th of 17 children, my parents, Samuel and Patsy McLeod, former slaves. Mother worked for her former owners to buy the very land which the family's hands toiled in the fields, picked, plucked, cut, weighed, also son and master beaten and atrociously mistreated on. By age 9, picked 250 pounds of cotton daily. But the whole world opened to me when I learned to read. I believed, achieved, and succeeded. In 1904, I opened the door of a school for Negro girls with 6 students. It increased to 102, gained financial support from whites. The school merged with the Cookman Institute, and in 2004, it celebrated its 100th anniversary. As life draws to a close, I pass on to Negroes everywhere an old woman's philosophy that may give them inspiration, fear is part of my legacy. Faith is the first factor in a life devoted to service. Without it, nothing is possible. With it, nothing is impossible. We have a powerful potential in our youth. We must have the courage to change old ideas and practices so that we may direct their power toward good ends. If we have the courage and tenacity of our forebears who stood firmly like a rock against the lash of slavery, we shall find a way to do for our day what they did for theirs. We live in a world which respects power above all things. Power, intelligently directed, can lead to more freedom. Unwisely directed, it can be a dreadful, destructive force. Therefore, I leave you love, hope, the challenge of developing confidence in one another, respect for the use of power. I leave you faith and racial dignity. I am Dr. Mary Jane McLeod Bethune, baller, shot caller, the end.
All right. That was beautiful.
Thank
powerful
you.
And beautiful at the same time. That really, really was. I love that. I love that poem. How does a poem begin for you? With an idea, a form, or an image?
All of those.
All of these?
All of those you named, and sometimes more. I have to also add that there is a spiritual component, spiritual or godly component to it that cannot be ignored, and I'm just directed, and I am obedient enough to follow the directions.
I understand. Do you think that you were meant to be a poet?
Oh, my. That's an interesting question. I'd have to say yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Tell me why.
I write all the time. In my workplace for many, many years, wherever I worked, whether in the legal field, labor management, or wherever, excuse me, I always did secretarial administrative work. And something that set me apart from a lot of others was I did shorthand. I was a stenographer. I always wrote. I would go into an attorney's office at 10 o'clock, and he'd sit there and dictate briefs and whatever, you know, for 2 or 3 hours. And thank God for shorthand. So I've always written. And in church, even, I always carry a notebook and I write. And particularly anybody who's speaking, if I'm really interested in what you're saying, I have my pen and paper ready.
Okay. All right. Do you sit and think through every word of every stanza, or do you write freely and allow the words to flow?
I write freely, allow the words to flow, then I go back, correct, revise, and finalize.
All right. I like that too. Would you share another one for us?
I sure will. Okay, this one is entitled Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Give him his props off the top. This is not a case of inferiority versus superiority complex, or is it a case of race, at least for us as club members, akin to ancestors hung from timbers? It's about reverence to God, honor, respect, And if you step into today, it's just politically correct. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., don't drop the reverend. Give him his props off the top. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was a man God ordained, God sustained, and God sent, grounded and rooted, highly educated, and even more spiritually intelligent, with the gifts of discernment, civil and political rights activists. Let me stop after this because you get the gist. Man, his life, legacy, and dream lives in each and every one of us. We cannot allow this trilogy to ever be a bust. Therefore, we must give reverence to God, always first and the highest, operating with decency and in order, which brings me right back where I started. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., let's give him his props. The top, the end.
Another beautiful, powerful piece. You know, all poets have several words that come up over and over again in their writing. They just can't help but use these words. What are three of your absolute favorite words to use?
In my writing, oh
in my. In your writing, yes.
That's also a very good question. I'm not, oh, well, I know on social media, and I keep telling myself I need to change that. My response to things that I like and share is always awesome. You know, awesome. Everything is awesomely awesome. So that
all right.
would be one of them. But, you know, I don't know how often I use that in my written poetry.
mm-hmm. Anything that comes to mind. Maybe from a spiritual perspective, what words that come to mind?
Which word comes to mind?
Yes.
And again, the awesomeness of God.
Oh, okay. All right. That's nice.
Yes.
All right. Are you published?
No, I'm not. It's something I'm working on, and I've been working on for far too long. Prayerfully, my next adventure and accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you were given an opportunity to be published and do book signings anywhere you wanted, what cities or countries would you definitely put on your book tour?
Oh, my goodness. Well, definitely in the DMV, you know, in that I am a native Washingtonian, you know. I want to definitely do home. Outside of that, any of the islands pretty much, just because of the beauty of it, I would love to go there, anywhere, Trinidad, Jamaica, anywhere. And just read and sign books and do poetry at the beach forever.
Now that don't sound like business. That sounds more like pleasure.
Well, when you can combine the two, it only makes it better. For sure.
All right.
Wouldn't that be the life?
That would be the life, just to be able to wake up in the morning, praise God, recite some poetry, eat some good food, and call it a day.
Absolutely. My goodness. Yes.
Do you have a writing group or community of writers you share your work with?
I do. I am a member of the Ebenezer AME Church Poetry Ministry. And the ministry is entitled The Anointed Pens. And I've been a member of that group for, oh my goodness, probably 12 or more years now.
Wow, that's nice.
And then there's a writing group on Facebook with Miss Cayenne.
Miss Cayenne.
Yes.
I know her well.
Yes, yes. So I participate in those writings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
Would you share another? Excuse me?
I said that's pretty much it.
Okay, okay. All right. Share another poem with us.
Oh, okay. This one is entitled Bee Ball. And it's a poem I wrote in 1994. I just absolutely love basketball.
All right.
So, up and down the court, some fall short, up against not the wall, but many do fall, gliding and striding up against the rim, with or without some kind of trim. Foul, pow, wow. 3-point shooters, whistles and all. I just love and enjoy B-ball. Barkley, Isaiah Thomas, my man, Ewing and Rodman, what a plan. KJ, MJ, DJ too. Forget about the three and just shoot for the two. Tall, tall, tall. 24-second violation, 5,000, you're out. Technical, flagrant, and hanging on the rim, some with or without trim. Oh, I just love and enjoy that B-ball. The end.
Let's take a brief break and we'll be right back.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here with Sharon Ingram, and she's sharing her wonderful work. Sharon, question for you.
Yes.
Okay. What makes a poem good?
Oh, the structure of it, the way it's presented.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the words and the words, the message that it contains.
Now, what do you think, as you think about being a poet, what would be a measure of success as a poet? What is a measure of success?
It varies. I would say it certainly varies.
Mm-hmm.
One measure that I found after doing poetry for a few years, I always thought I was writing for me. But the more I shared, people would communicate to me how they enjoyed and how they were touched and their reactions to my poems, I came to realize that, no, they weren't just for me. They were for others, and others seemed to benefit from them. So that's a form of success. Me.
All right.
I never
you know
that.
Please continue. I'm sorry.
No problem.
That was one of my questions. One of my questions to you is going to be, does knowing that your poems are out there in the world, people hearing them, does it validate your being a poet, or are you content knowing they're just out of your system?
I think it certainly validates you being a poet.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly helps to And I would highly advise that you do share and recite it, get it out of your system, because one of my favorite poems, most popular poems, award-winning poems, I did in 2014. I wrote it, and when we talked about and how I mentioned that spiritual and godly portion of writing, that particular poem called A Child's Prayer in Today's World, it was definitely a communication, a command from God. There was no ifs, ands, and buts about it. And I was very obedient. I did not hesitate to follow his directions or instructions. And I wrote the poem in, I don't know, 20 minutes. And as I was writing it, God directed me. He said, every time you recite this poem, recite it in the voice of a child. And I'm like, what? What? You know, but again, I was obedient. I went to a performance where the ministry was performing, and I didn't know which poem to present, and I had this poem, A Child's Prayer, that I had never recited in public, and I debated, and finally I selected it to read. And before I could get halfway through the poem, I could hear sniffles, people clearing their throat, and some people I could visually see the tears falling from their eyes. And if ever there was a confirmation, that more than certainly was it.
All right. Will you share it with us?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I most certainly will. A Child's Prayer. In Today's World, Prayer 1. Dear God, Jesus Christ, and the friendly ghost I like the most, please make my mom heal. She can't get up to fix breakfast anymore, and sometimes we find her sick or sleep on the floor. Because she's sick and our stamp's gone, till next month, she say, I'm scared to cook again, 'cause I got burnt with hot water when I tried to fix oodles of noodles for me and my brother Malcolm. God, my arm and hand still hurt, and at school, kids call me crispy. But my mom says I can grow up and be a plastic doctor and fix it myself. God, my mom not home when we get out of school. I try to get food, clean up, and read to Malcolm. But my stomach hurts and makes loud noises. I just cry and go to bed. I hope she brings us some food and stamps, so I can go to the store again and get some cereal, milk, peanut butter, jelly, applesauce, hot dogs, potato fries, donuts, and Pop-Tarts, because I'm smart. God, heal my mom so she can take care of us like long, long, long time ago. She fixed breakfast, walked us to school, home, fixed dinner, and helped with homework. We had clothes then. Now, no. God, my mom says when my father gets out of jail, things will be fine and all good. Until then, she can't take no more. She just give her She says she just wants some wine and her backwoods, smoking, drinking, and feeling fine. God, can she feel fine and be sick, cry, and sleep all day? My mom used to read the Bible to us about God, Jesus Christ, and the friendly ghost I like the most. She don't no more, though. She say, I ain't got time for that. Get away. Shut up and sit down. God, let my father out so we can be fine and heal my mom to take care of us before the school's people take us away, my mom say. Thank you, God. Can you send us some food from the sky or on high so Malcolm can get up and walk? Hurry. Please. 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 Amen. The end.
You know, I've heard a lot of poetry over the course of the last 2 years that I've hosted this show, but I'm really stunned by that work. I'm really stunned.
My, thank you very much. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and you're right. It hits you in a different place, and it makes you go somewhere in your mind, and I think that's what poetry needs to do, to help you see something that you can't see.
My goodness. Yes. Bless you.
Mm. Yes. You know, all great writers, and I'm putting you in that category, have great writing influences. Who are some of yours, and what makes them great in your eyes? Some of your writing influences.
Nikki Giovanni. I have to say, unbeknownst to her, she is my mentor and has been for years. She wrote a poem, one of the very first poems I ever really liked, and it was in the 70s, and the name of it was I Wrote a Good Omelet.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't mind, I'd like to share it. It's just a few lines.
No, please, please. I'd love it. I'd love it.
It's called I Wrote a Good Omelet and Ate a Hot Poem After Loving You. Buttoned my car and drove my coat home in the rain after loving you. I goed on red and stopped on green, floating somewhere in between. Being here and being there after loving you. I rolled my bed, turned down my hair, slightly confused, but I don't care. The end.
What is it about her work that impresses you?
That particular piece describes me to a T.
Okay. All right.
Did, without a doubt. But she had so many pieces. Oh, my goodness. You know, and I just love them. And the second person is Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Mm.
His work is
so... How'd he inspire you?
Mm-hmm. Just in his words, his speaking, his written words... they are so eloquent, so exquisite. I just wish I could write just a phrase that could be 2/10 of what all of his are. I feel like I would be, oh my goodness, the most successful poet or writer in the world.
When did you first start writing, and what made you feel the need? What made you feel the need to express yourself in this way?
I start writing. It's a funny story. When my son was about 8 or 9 years old, and shout out to my son Sean Ingram. Every evening after his homework was done, we would play games. He always, without fail, wanted to play Monopoly. He loved it. I mean, absolutely loved it. I didn't. It got to a point where I said, I just can't do it anymore. So I told him we needed to do something different. We definitely needed to do something different, just had to. So I suggested that we write lyrics and lyrics to songs, and perhaps we could sell it. And that piqued his interest, you know. So we sat down a few evenings and we wrote, and of course at 8 or 9 he was writing rap songs, you know, and I wrote a few poems, and that was the very beginning, and I've been writing ever since.
You know, again, some poets also have activities that are creative in other areas. What are some of your favorite non-poetry or literature activities?
Music. As a lover of music, oh, my God. most genres, blues, R&B, inspirational, you name it, absolute. I love cooking. It's a hobby. Absolutely love that. And sometimes I create things like silk floral arrangements. Yeah.
You're right. Would you share one more before we take a brief break?
Sure. It's Women's History Month, so to women. I'm a proud black woman. I'll say it out loud. I'm a proud black woman. No one can ever take this away from me, nor am I concerned with what others think or see. God made me. He sun-kissed me internally and externally. Then Jesus Christ gave me life eternally. I, too, know deep within, betwixt or between the hatred, envy, all the discord displayed and seen. They long to have or to be like me, my lips, hips, hair, and eyes, down to my thighs. I know I raise and I rise. They become mesmerized, perplexed, surprised, spellbound and fascinated with uncontrollable and burning desire, much like the destruction of dry land raging fires. God gifted me with an abundance of pigment that determines the color of my skin, hair, and eyes, called melanin, while others keep meddling and peddling with suntans, salons, burns, rays, and too many overexposure days, wanting to be like me. And why don't they know or see what God has for me is for me? He sun-kissed me internally and externally. Then Jesus Christ gave me life eternally. I'm a proud black woman, and yes, I'll say it out loud. I'm a proud black woman. I'm a proud black woman. The end.
Proud black woman. I can tell. We'll be right back.
Okay.
I'm here with Sharon Ingram. It is National Women's History Month, and it is an opportunity for people to come together and talk about women's history, the importance of it. Next week on the docket is a program called Her Story. And four women poets will be here to share their story. And that's at 8 o'clock p.m. next Wednesday night. Excuse me. Sharon, are you with me? Sharon's line dropped, but I'm sure she'll be back. So what I'll do in her absence is share a piece of poetry of my own. This is called The Mechanics of Aretha Around Midnight. Late at night, I sit on the floor. I drink ice-cold cherry lemonade and eat large spoonfuls of peanut butter from a kid-tested plastic peanut pan jar. I listen to music, which softly plays on the wobbly old brown record player stored in the corner of my room. Motown, epicenter of the sounds of young America. Philly soul, served fresh from the city of brotherly love. The jazz of Train, the favorite son of a syncopated city in small town North Carolina. And the queen of soul, Miss Aretha Franklin. The gospel and soul siren who crossed over the chasm that led to a land of the free, a sun-kissed mockingbird whose cavernous voice created new routes to the moon. Alone, sitting in the dark, I listen to these cadent sounds and voices carved into disc-shaped black vinyl 45 RPM speed records, which deliberately skip forward and backward yet playfully repeated the same 1.8 seconds of track. A strange mix of audio, clicks and pops and warps and sounds and locked grooves that transported me into three complete minutes of love, of pain, of sadness. Three soulful minutes that around midnight soothed parts of my young, misunderstood, already broken heart. You better not watch that record. You better not watch it, and you better not scratch it. Evil words spewed by my younger sister, a bad-mannered girl who regularly wore crimson and cream-colored hooped earrings and my mama's sapphire bejeweled scarf to bed each night. This ain't the weekend. Two tired voices from two doors down the hall yelled in unison. You've got school in the morning. Lights turned off quickly. Music turned down squeaky low. Still entranced, I stay up around midnight, moved by the dust scratches, audio clicks and pops of the queen of soul's soulful strength. And other heartfelt crooning carved into disc-shaped black vinyl, healing my heart and healing the weak. Thank you. All right. Let me share another. This is called Wolf. It was an inauspicious day when he decided to unloosen life's leash. His frayed black leash had become too tight, clawing his bedraggled neck with no regard for the anger or words bottled up in his throat. He couldn't scream or ask for release, to romp, play, or run free. Couldn't pull and lunge at everything or heaven forbid, speak to Miss June Jackson, the beaten-down young woman who often blushed in his presence. So he packed up belongings in a brown paper-stained bag, opened his unguarded gate, and he ran away. Now I'd like to read one by Pablo Neruda. I enjoy Pablo Neruda's work, and this one's called If You Forget Me. I want you to know one thing. You know how this is. If I look at the crystal moon, at the red branch of the slow autumn at my window, if I touch near the fire the impalpable ash or the wrinkled body of the log, everything carries me back to you, as if everything that exists, aromas, light, metals, were little boats that sail toward those isles of yours that wait for me. Well now, if little by little you stop loving me, I shall stop loving you little by little. If suddenly you forget me, do not look for me, for I shall already have forgotten you. If you think it's long and mad, the the winds of banner that passes through my life, and you decide to leave me at the shore of the heart where I have roots. Remember that on that day, at that hour, I shall lift my arms and my roots will set off to seek another land. But if each day, each hour, you feel that you are destined for me with implacable sweetness, if each day a flower climbs up to your lips to seek me, ah, my love, ah, my love, on my own, in me all that fire is repeated, in me nothing is extinguished or forgotten. My love feeds on your love, beloved, and as long as you live it, will be in your arms without leaving mine. Pablo Neruda. We'll be right back. Sharon is with me. You're there, Sharon, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not sure what happened, but I thought I was on hold too long.
Well, I read a couple of poems in your absence.
Heart, bless
it's
your heart.
It's still in the time.
I'm so sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. That's I thought you were gone for good.
Oh, no. I said, wait a minute. That's a long pause or commercial break or whatever. And I had to re-find the number. I tried calling you on the 202 number, and, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah. You weren't available.
Well, recite another poem for us.
You said recite another poem?
Yes, ma'am.
Gladly. This one is entitled A Window Glance, something I wrote in January of 2011. Can you hear me? Because I had the
Yes, I can.
Sound.
Yes,
okay,
perfect.
Great. Okay, thank you. In the ebony of what is opposite of day, appear trees in a liturgical line dance sway, robed in white that temporarily lights the night. It's a window glance where I see a dance. The trees reverencing their maker. The limbs bow, sway, raise, and seem to take flight, ice and snow-laden and white. They were docked and rocked as if substituting for the snow sound drowned and hidden rocks. The winds provided the music as movement. Oh, what an added beauty improvement to an unusual ebony night that was lit with snow light. It's a window glance where I see a dance. I join the activity of the trees in my very own way, reverencing our maker, savior, comforter, and non-forsaker. I sang, prayed, and flashlight read the word with the almighty eternal truth and the light. It's a window glance where I see, and I did a dance, just like the trees. I seem to have taken flight with much comfort, peace, rest, and spiritual delight. The end.
What are you trying to communicate with your art?
With my art?
Yes. What are you trying to communicate to others?
I think there's a variety of subjects. I sometimes have, well, I actually have a segment of my book that I called Everybody's Entitled to My Opinion.
Okay.
So maybe a little of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I just like sharing, and I always hope there's a very positive message or educational message or a different point of view that will give people something to think about, at least.
Has your idea of poetry changed since you began writing poetry? Of what it is and what it can do, has it changed at all?
Yes, it has. I just originally started out, like I said, with my son, you know, with the rose of red, violets of blue, you know. Oh, my goodness. It is so much more, you know. And you can go anywhere with it, you know.
Like where? Like where? Talk to me. Like where?
You can go around the world and back again. You can go up to the high heavens with it. You can go as low as the dwelling place of Satan. I mean, there's absolutely no limits to where you can go, what you can do. I guess it all depends on you, your thoughts, what you see or are inspired to write about.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's so much happening in the world today. We're living in a time where it's so much uncertainty.
Yes.
What do you see as being the role of a poet in modern day society? What's our role?
Mm-hmm. I oftentimes think we're somewhat of disciples.
Hmm. Tell me more about that.
I just believe that, and I would like to think that you have to possess a certain or a variety of particular attributes, knowledge, and familiarity with many things in order to write about varied subject matters.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, we all can write about the current news events or whatever, you know, but particularly if you are talking about something that's inspirational or godlike or something like that, you should or must have some knowledge or experience with that. Yeah.
All right. Now, you're a native Washingtonian.
Yes, I am.
And it sounds like a proud native Washingtonian.
I am. Bet I am.
All right. How has being a Washingtonian influenced your writing?
You get to see a lot. I often say everything in this area, the DMV, if not everywhere, but more so in this area, everything is political.
Mm.
Going to McDonald's, ordering a small size fries is political. It's no getting around it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then just being in the nation's capital, you know, that's special within itself.
Mm-hmm.
And to see the many, many changes that have taken place, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Even
sure.
As a native Washingtonian, you barely recognize and remember, you know,
because
it's changed so much.
Right. Share another poem for us, please.
Okay. This one is entitled Grocery Garbage. Save our children, if not ourselves. Let's save our children, if not ourselves. I believe our ancestors would turn over in their graves if they had a clue, more or less knew about the grocery garbage to our families we fed and gave. Today, we are becoming much like the Monsanto agrochemical and agricultural biotech corps and food industries that supply, feed, stem cell produce, procure, and buy vast amounts of harmful, unhealthy, and malnourishing food ripe for the slaughter. How dare us continue to slow kill our families, sons, and daughters with high sugar, sodium, chemical, and pesticide filled grocery garbage, which kills and causes so many diseases and illnesses for which we must be treated by chemotherapy, injections, surgery, amputations, and pills. Families, let's wake up and create a food living will. Now, if you don't believe me, check it out for yourself. On your next few visits to grocery stores, simply observe the items in shopping carts. Sugar runneth over cereals, milk, can we say lactose intolerant, soda, chips, candy, juice, drinks, cakes, pies, ice creams, canned this, frozen that, instant processed, enriched, pre-cooked, huge amounts of fat and the hormones, sodium, antibiotic, injected poultry, and meats. I won't even mention the woes of those. Where are the health-conscious people? Did we all fall asleep at the table after being grocery garbage filled and then became disabled to plant, grow, shop for, cook and eat clean, fresh, organic, life-giving and sustaining, nutrient-filled, fresh veggie and fruit meals? My people, what's the real deal with us? On a regular, meal shopping at carryouts, fast food joints, and food courts, as if they have been officially ordained or proclaimed prime ministers or food kings, and or meals on wheels. Time's up. Save the children, if not ourselves. Our children learn from and emulate what we do. We must be and set good examples for our families, especially our children, because most of us over 40 are half dead, mainly because of the grocery garbage we've been fed. Let's not kill the children, too. Our ancestors had and did the food thing right. They purchased at the marketplace, not order out. We got phone numbers on speed dial in haste to be filled with grocery garbage waste, poisonously disguised to appeal to your taste buds. Oh, I meant buds. We cannot continue to ingest or purchase this mess, kick it to the curb and stick it in the can as pickup for the garbage, man. Save our children, if not ourselves. The end.
And the title of that piece again?
Grocery Garbage, Save Our Children, If Not Ourselves.
What's important to consider when you're titling a poem?
I think it obviously is an introduction as to it gives you an idea of what the poem is about, somewhat what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it should reflect that. And then you take it from there, or you take it from there, or it goes there. And a lot of times the name of the poem is the last thing I attach to it.
Okay.
It just depends by the time I'm finished or think I'm finished, you know, what all I have in its contents.
Some people write pen to paper, pen and paper. Others type out everything on the computer. How do you write? What's your preferred method of writing?
My preferred method is typing, although I understand that handwriting helps you to retain what's written. So while I do a lot of handwriting, it's just easier and faster to type. And you can always go back and revise or add to it or whatever, but I tell you, I find it almost impossible for me to read or recite from handwritten poetry.
Oh, wow. Why is that?
Yeah. I don't know. I have a problem with it. The typewritten words are just clear for me. And I
would think being a stenographer, you'd know everything, whether it was that you'd know it. You could see it.
You could see it, but I need to see it in one form, and a clear form, and very neatly written in a line form. And I'm horrible with that. I tell you, mine has no measurements, my lines, for the most part. I just definitely prefer typed written words.
All right.
It works for me, yes.
Well, we've got a few more minutes. We're almost done. Please share one more of your works.
Okay. This one is entitled My Hunger Plea. Please don't posthumously poster child me. Lethargically prone to sleep day and night. Nothing about my body is right. The never-ending pains and strains caused by hunger pangs hurt and scream as loud and profound as the discharge of high-powered automatic firearms. Yet daily, few or no edible resources are available for consumption to help me heal or gain normal function. My hunger plea. Please don't posthumously poster child me. I was forced by nourishment denial to overstand the condition of undernutrition, learning underdevelopment, malnutrition, and the deprivation of a quintessential staple, nourishment, nutrients, food that everybody needs and yearns. Although in a world with super wealthy people and one organization, department, agency, or service after another that purports to care for, supply, and support those in need of basic survival needs, too many seem to profusely bleed more red tape than succeed in supplying the mere needs of those in need. My hunger plea, please don't posthumously poster child me. Find a solid solution to end world starvation with no hesitation. Implement the methodology to grow and serve healthy and sustainable agriculture for all in need, plant by plant, seed by seed. Characteristic of a statistic that shows every 10 seconds a child dies of starvation, and many of us suffer a severe protein deficiency that causes the abdomen to distend, bloating, resulting from the retention of fluid, and yet there's only one to few food or natural resources I intake daily, rice or ramen noodles, seasoned with a death essence of Flint, Michigan, like water. My hunger plea, please don't posthumously poster child me. Find a solid solution to end world starvation with no hesitation. Implement the methodology to grow and serve healthy and sustainable agriculture for all in need, plant by plant, seed by seed. Save me. the end.
You know, that's a very important piece to end on. The importance of understanding hunger. Very important.
Yeah.
Last thing for you. I'll let you go. When people hear your work, I'm sure they usually want more. What's next for you as a poet?
Hopefully and prayerfully, writing and producing this book, publishing this book that's too many years undone. And I certainly will continue to write for the rest of life, I hope. Can't imagine stopping now.
Right. Well, you are. Okay, please continue. I'm so excited that you're here. I don't know what to say. I'm smiling ear to ear.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. I certainly appreciate the opportunity and should have opened with a grateful thankfulness to you for the invitation to present on
your
show.
You know, we still could be cousins, you know.
I know, that's right. We'll have to definitely find out about that.
Wouldn't that be something if we were two poets, cousins?
yes, absolutely. Wonderful.
All right, then. Well, I'd like to say good night to you.
Well,
and thank you again
thank you.
For sharing your gift. You're very talented for sharing your gift with the world. And
bless you.
Yes. And I'd like to say thank you to our listening audience. We'll be back again next week, as I shared during the interim. And have a blessed week, everybody. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.